Chapter 11. Joe bolted from the front porch and ran to the corner. He hoped he'd hear some sound, the roar of a car's engine, the slap of running feet, to show that the girl who'd stood there was flesh and blood. But he heard and saw nothing. It was as if Iola had turned to mist and disappeared. Joe rubbed a trembling hand across his eyes.
"Maybe I am going nuts," he muttered. "Or maybe there are such things as ghosts."
If such things as vengeful spirits did stalk the night, what better time than Halloween for them to walk the earth?
"She's playing with me,"
Joe whispered.
"She doesn't want revenge. She wants me to suffer."
He ran into the house, grabbed his jacket and car keys, then dashed back out and jumped into the van.
"The grave's a fine and private place," he quoted, gunning the engine.
"Well, I'm in the mood to crash your private party!"
Joe's voice rose, even though there was no one for him to talk to.
"You want me? Fine! I'm coming, Iola! And all this ends tonight, one way or another!"
The Cessna had barely rolled to a stop in front of the hangar when Frank jumped down from the cockpit. For the whole trip back to Bayport, he'd pressed every ounce of power out of the twin engines. A tailwind had helped him back in less than 2 hours. Frank yawned and stretched. He'd be glad to get home.
"Hang on there,"
came a gruff voice. Frank turned to see Matt, Rick Meyerhold's mechanic, approaching the plane. The tall, lanky, gray-haired man took care of the flight school's small fleet of planes as if they were his children. The mechanic regarded Frank's disheveled appearance.
"I hope the plane came back better than you did,"
he said grumpily.
"Heard about this big fight here. Doctor made Mr. M go to bed, so I figured I'd wait until you came back."
"Is Rick gonna be all right?"
Frank asked. Matt shrugged.
"Just a little shook up. But if I know Mr. M, he'll probably be running classes tomorrow."
He jerked a thumb back at the hangar.
"What were you doing in there? Playing catch? There were boxes all over the place."
"We probably should have stayed to clean things up, but we were in a hurry."
"You and your young lady friend,"
Matt said. He cocked his head and looked over at the plane.
"Where's she now?"
"She stayed in Maine,"
Frank said quietly, grief fighting with exhaustion.
"Well,"
Matt said, reaching into his back pocket and pulling out a scarf.
"I found this on the hangar floor. Do you know if it's hers?"
Frank took it gently.
"Yeah, that's hers. I must have dropped it during the flight. Thanks."
Matt wished him a good night.
"Or rather, good morning,"
the mechanic said with a grin. Tucking the scarf in his jacket pocket, Frank ran across the field and into the terminal. He quickly found a payphone and dialed home.
"Come on, Joe, pick up the phone."
But his brother didn't answer. Frank slammed down the receiver and headed straight for the parking lot. Callie's car was right where they had left it only a few hours before. Frank reached under the front bumper and removed a little box attached there by magnets. Inside was a spare set of car keys. Frank smiled sadly. Callie was so afraid she'd lose her keys somewhere, she'd ordered the box from a catalog. Frank felt his eyes begin to sting. No time for tears now, he thought. He had to get home and make sure Joe was all right. Then he would have to do the hardest thing he'd ever had to do in his life. He would have to call Callie's parents. Frank opened the door, got behind the wheel, and threw the car into gear. The tires screeched on the pavement as he sped out of the lot. "This place sure looks private," Joe Hardy thought as he pulled up at the gates to Bayport Cemetery. It was located at the edge of town in an area sparsely inhabited, at least by the living, Joe thought. He climbed over the low stone wall surrounding the cemetery, then headed down a gravel path under the starlight. The cold cut through him, and Joe trembled inside and out. But he kept moving toward the Morton Mausoleum. Mist was rising from the ground as Joe finally reached his destination. The small stone structure rested at the foot of a hill, just past a grove of pine trees. Once, Iola had pointed it out to him, and Frank and Joe could never have imagined that all too soon Iola's closed coffin would be placed there. Joe's heart ached at the memory. The coffin had been a symbol, in a way, of her death, for as with Vanessa, the explosion hadn't left a trace of her to bury. Coffin had been a symbol, in a way. Oh, good lord. A sickly glow seemed to light the mist as Joe moved toward the mausoleum. Joe expected the metal door of the mausoleum to be locked, but it swung easily inward at the pressure of his hand. Total darkness and chilly, musty air greeted him. There was complete silence. Even the wind seemed to have died away. Joe took a step forward, and the blackness instantly erupted. He heard screeching and the sound of flapping wings. Fluttering furry shapes flashed past his face, sometimes actually brushing it. Joe threw his arms up as to protect himself against the wave of bats. As he did so, he heard a woman's laughter echoing off the walls of the mausoleum, almost blending with the high-pitched call of the bats. Then Joe felt a sharp pain at his neck. Liquid fire raced through his veins.
Join us!
The woman cried out. In that moment, Joe's world shattered. To his unbelieving eyes, the small stone structure he stood in seemed to shift and grow. He stumbled outside. The odd glow he'd noticed earlier heightened. The bats around him filled the sky, shaping into massive creatures with wings and burning yellow eyes. This can't be happening, Joe told himself. But it was real! Iola stood before him, pale as death. She seemed to be laughing at him. Joe felt the ground crack beneath his feet. Tombstones fell and exploded. And from the earth, the dead rose! Rank and decayed, they oozed from their graves, advancing on Joe Hardy.